This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
So the AU is turning 20 or has turned 20. It was in September 1999, actually, that saw the CIRTA declaration paving the way for the formation of the African Union. It took them about a couple of years to work out the details in what was called the Constitutive Act. And finally, the new body came into being 20 years ago. Along with many stakeholders, such as the UNDP, the AU is celebrating this milestone with a campaign titled Our Africa, Our Future. So let's talk now to Dr. Adeoye Akinola, who is the head of research and teaching institute for the Pan-African Thought and Conversation at the University of Johannesburg. Dr. Akinola, thank you so much for coming through. So the AU has reached this important milestone, 20 years of existence, but is there a lot to celebrate?
Thank you so much. I like the way the question has been actually presented. Is there really something to celebrate? And I will respond by saying, despite the pessimism that people have expressed concerning the AU, Africa has been better with the AU. It could have been worse without the AU. So in a way, there are things to still celebrate.
Okay. So what is there to celebrate? What is this change brought about by the AU?
Thank you so much. We noted the failings of the African, the OAU, and that which brought to the fore the plans to even put the AU in place to enhance African regional integration and to be able to have the capacity to also combat conflict across Africa. Now, over the years, in the last 20 years, people have actually complained, including myself, about the incapacity of the African Union. Talk about the African peace and security architecture. We have had reason to actually critique its activities because it has not done enough. But however, if you also look at the moderate achievement they have been able to accomplish, of course, even in Southern Africa here, we're talking about the crisis in Mozambique and the brewing crisis in DRC Congo. People have expected the AU to move in forcefully and to actually prevent the escalation of those conflicts or try to enforce peacekeeping in those zones. But they have been able, indirectly through the SADC, to also make sure that they put their feet on the ground by empowering the regional organization to also act. In terms of diplomacy, and some of the time, people might not actually know what some of the things they are doing, perhaps through Council of the Wise, perhaps through what we call the early warning system. Some of the information and some of their activities are not easily known because the people in Africa are not integrated into the African Union activities, and the media sometimes do not even give you that kind of coverage as we have in the EU, for instance. So some of the time there are things they do that we do not know because they've not put in place the instruments for people to also have the knowledge of what they do.
So they should pay more attention to public affairs and public diplomacy, which would help to publicize their work. Okay, so let's talk about the building blocks of an AU, because we know that 20 years ago was the discontinuation of the Organization of African Unity as it morphed and became something brand new, the AU. And the fundamental shift was we're no longer focused on issues of liberation, decolonization, but we're focused on issues of development. And hence, the AU's defining blueprint is Agenda 2063. Tell us about its key pillars, please.
Thank you so much. And if we go to history, there have been all kinds of agendas. There have been MDG, Millennium Developmental Goals, and all kinds of globally supported agenda to better the lives of people. But in case of the African Union, what they have successfully done is to put programs in place, including the our Africa, our future. But if you look at some of those things that the AU have planned to accomplish, these are actually commendable, talking about silencing the guns, for instance. Their aim is to make sure that by 2030, no gun will sound in Africa, except maybe they are burning somebody and they just have to do the ceremonial shooting of guns. Those are some of the agendas they have put in place. In terms of, you know, healthcare, they have this African health strategy whereby they try to cater for the well-being of Africa. So in terms of programs they have put in place, brilliant, exceptional. But the question is, do they have the capacity to actually implement some of these programs? Over the years, guns ought to have stopped 2 years ago by 2020, but up till now, guns remain to be blasted above the top of the roof, even in the headquarters of the AU, talking about Ethiopia itself.
So let me just understand what you're saying. Silencing the guns, is it a metaphor for ending wars and conflict? Is it about proliferation of small arms? Or is it about just kind of, you know, keeping the community peace? I'm not understanding this, because if silencing the guns is a broad issue of peace and security, then I think it's fair to say they failed dismally there.
Thank you very much. It encompasses everything you have just mentioned. What they are trying to do with silencing the gun is to make sure that guns are no longer blasted in Africa in terms of keeping peace in Congo, DRC, in Mozambique, in Nigeria, in Mali. We're not even restricted to non-state actors. We are also talking about military government that will use the gun to also overthrow civilian government. So the broader picture of silencing the guns is to make sure that in Africa there is peace and security. And this understanding is based on the nexus between security and development. Without peace, there can be development.
Well, to that end, I think we can fairly say no. 2 out of 10 at best, because we have just seen attempts for military takeover in Mali earlier this year. In Guinea-Bissau, a Malian coup foiled. We are seeing, as you referred to it, conflict in northern Ethiopia. We continue to see flashpoints in Nigeria and kidnappings in northern Nigeria, and eastern DRC remains quite volatile. So is northern Mozambique. And, you know, some of these situations carrying on unabated, and what it's needed in some cases are foreign countries to get involved, like French troops in the Sahel, for instance, or the Saudis to help the Ethiopians neutralize the insurgency in the north, for instance, and countries like Rwanda to go in behind SADC to help northern Mozambique. And it's not at the behest of the African Union.
Yes, maybe I will go a little bit above what you have scored. And maybe I will give them 2.5.
Okay.
More than 2.10 that you gave them. But we have to also be realistic. Of course, the African Union have this force. They call African Union standby force. And in one of my arguments, I've said that these standby force are not standing by anywhere, because they rely also on the benevolence of member states. It's not as if they are that poor that they couldn't fund some peacekeeping operation, but they are not all that buoyant also. Peacekeeping operation is exceedingly expensive to fund, and that's why most of the peacekeeping operations we have had in Africa, led by the AU, have actually struggled. And that was why they were always asking the United Nations to absorb their own forces. And that was what led to the AU and the UN peacekeeping force in Darfur, for instance, because of their financial incapacity to pull through whatever they have planned. In reality, if you look at Africa, almost everywhere there are conflicts everywhere. I understand their incapacity to be able to combat terrorism because of the complexity. But in case of military coup, for instance, the AU have no excuse not to have been able to put in place those mechanisms that will make it exceedingly complex for a military leader to stay in power for even more than 1 month. Right. And we have seen them in power for like 2 years. For instance, in Mali, that's really failure on their part.
We've also seen the launch and the commissioning of the African Continental Free Trade Area, which speaks to the regional integration priorities of the AU and its Agenda 2063. So that's something that I think is an accomplishment. The trouble is SMEs across the continent keep asking, how do we latch on? How do we leverage this opportunity? How is it going to work for us?
I remember the formative stage of ECOWAS, and a country like Gambia was asking, what do I stand to benefit by joining ECOWAS? Of course, there is free trade now, but who is trading? That's the question people may want to ask. And the other question is, how does this translate to the improvement of the livelihood of people, particularly in villages, in the hinterland? How does it affect their life? How does it affect my life, maybe as a lecturer or academic somewhere else. But we have to be realistic that if Africa could pull together their resources, their commerce and trade, Africa will become the biggest economy in the world, or be the biggest market in the world. And they could think about what they stand to benefit, and that's possibly the motivation. But let us also be realistic. How practicable is a free trade without free movement of people? Yeah. Everywhere capital moves, people move along with capital. Right. So there are other things that they have to address before even after can actually succeed in Africa. Many countries signed it, but the same country that have signed it have also rolled out other policies to counter the success of the free trade area. So there are all kinds of concerns, and that's why my institute, the IPATC, has tried to put in place a conversation to discuss all of these EU 20 coming up in November. But we will tackle some of these concerns during the meeting.
We've got a few callers coming through, but just before we go there, I'd like you to answer me this. I'm watching visuals now of the inauguration of the new president of Kenya, preparations or just a precursor to that actual ceremony. And we know that for Kenya to have come to this point took a lot. Because the election dispute, the election result was disputed. Electoral commissioners recused themselves from that announcement. There were fears of possible unrest if this issue isn't resolved. It was resolved in the courts. And it's not just Kenya. Zimbabwe going to elections next year, already saying we need neutrality. We need the elections to be properly monitored. We need support in building the programs towards the elections to make sure that everything around the elections has integrity. And this is becoming quite a repetitive theme in that, yes, there have been democratic transitions. It is smooth transfers to power, but always that democratic exercise is fraught. What can the AU do to help countries preparing for elections to get it right?
Thank you so much. You know, the first thing the AU usually do is to send ahead, even before the elections, election monitoring a team to monitor the conduct of the election to be able to determine if the election is free and fair. But we are also forgetting the fact that to actually declare an election to be free and fair goes beyond what transpires during the conduct of the election. It starts from party nominations from even the grassroots. How were the candidates nominated? Were people the people have the rights to freely contest? In many of the African countries, you see the government, the incumbents, arresting the opposition. So when they denied the opposition the right to contest and somebody else contested against the incumbents, and maybe AU will come 2 days to the election and the election relatively lose free and fair. Is that free and fair election? No. How in a population of about 50 million and maybe 30 million eligible to vote, you see in society that maybe 9 million will vote. Those are the concerns that the AU should also try to focus on. Why are people displaying this political apathy? Why are they not too interested in government? Why is the AU so much far away from promoting governance across many of the African states? Those are the issues that should be point of concern.
Well, we've got Gamo and Vereniging who'd like to say something. Gamo, good day.
How are you, Oslo?
Fine, thank you. Go ahead.
And morning to the guests. I just want to start my comment first with a quote A code, it says, a nation cannot prosper unless it has overcome the problems of communication. Without communication, agriculture cannot develop, nor can commerce or industry thrive. It is communication that relates and binds people together by ties of friendship. Those are the words of His Imperial Majesty on unity and brotherhood. In 20 years, there is nothing to celebrate. As far as I'm concerned, the African Union is incapacitated. They act as a paralyzing structure meant to distract Africans from truly uniting. Why am I saying this? In the interest that you have Africans and atrocities being done to Africans, it does not have to be only in Africa, like we are, what the guest is saying there with wars and stuff. Africans are experiencing hardships throughout the world. In China, who is supposed to be representing the interests of Africans in China? It's supposed to be the African Union. No, it's not supposed to be the African Union. It's supposed to be the African National Congress. As funny as it sounds, but they need to surrender the republic and focus on a renewable ANC, which is going to be a globalization of the ANC. Now in Nigeria, if Africans are not being represented, we're supposed to represent the interests of Africans in Nigeria. It should be the African National Congress of Nigeria.
Okay, I think we're moving in a completely different direction there. But I guess the point is, you know, we need to see more of the African Union internally and in the diaspora and in issues that affect Africans wherever they may find themselves in the world. Phil, good morning.
Good morning, Cecilia, and good morning to your learned guest. You know, the Africa is a country that is on a rise, and you can see that 65% of Africans are below 35. So we should use advantage. We should make advantage of that youth bulge to develop Africa. But we can't do that thing alone if we have structures like AU not playing their part when there are conflicts, when there are xenophobic incidents, starting from 1969 with that Berlin conference, which demarcated Africa into borders. When we are seeing xenophobic things in Ivory Coast, in Senegal, Congo, Zimbabwe, Kenya, Uganda, Angola, and Gabon, that was run by Omar Bongo from 1967 to 1942 when he died. We need to, African Union must assist, especially these countries that whose democracies can't last for 5 years. They must do the following three things. AU must come up with AU must come up with the preventive diplomacy, mediation, and the multi-tracking initiatives. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. Okay, so Dr. Akinola, what do you have to say? So the first thing is taking advantage of the youth dividend, but making sure that there are opportunities for young people to participate meaningfully in the economy as well. And then it's all these issues around collective diplomacy and not being shy to deal with real issues on the ground, like Afrophobia, xenophobia, and those kinds of issues.
Yeah, thank you. It's actually true that Africa presently has the highest rate of active population. If you look at the people that have been migrating from Africa, many of them have been youth. And this is something that Africa ought to take advantage of. Countries like China took advantage of this, and they have developed. There's something about population that enhances development. But in Africa, what you have is youth unemployment. If you go around, even the urban center, you go to the four walls of the urban center, you see many youth restless. Many of them are wasting away in the villages and in the rural areas because they have not just that they have no jobs, they do not even have hope of getting jobs. So sometimes, of course, we turn our attention to African Union, and some of the time we do not try to blame our own governments, because African Union cannot do everything. But one thing we want them to have is this unified policies on youth development. There are ways they can speak to governments, because we know AU is an elitist government. composed of leaders. So that's where they can put their pressures on heads of state to try and implement internal policy that will exploit the strength of their youth. That's one way. Then in terms of this, or something you call maybe unified diplomacy or collective diplomacy, it's very difficult for a continent to behave externally in one voice. What Africa could do, if the issue is about Africa, then we can speak about this unity in the approach, this African solution to Africa's problem, which is okay. But when the issue is not in Africa and it's not directly related to Africa, maybe talking about the war in Ukraine and Russia, for instance, it is exceedingly difficult for Africa to have a unified voice. EU wouldn't have that.
But I think the trouble here is, if you use that Ukraine, Russia example, as people fled the hotspots, many Africans found themselves on the receiving end of a lot of bad policies around refugees passing through. They were not allowed to get on buses that would evacuate them. There was a lot of that kind of racializing of the problem, and they all felt it as Africans. And surely the AU could have said something in their defense and could have helped to repatriate citizens of Africa out of that conflict zone.
Let me give you an instance. What I've always said is African leaders do not like African people. I've always said that. And if you look at even the character of the EU in terms of reacting to the coup, reacting to the Ukraine-Russia conflict, you know the chairperson of the EU actually spoke to the president of Russia, spoke to the president of Ukraine, and have been making concerted efforts to actually resolve this conflict. When in Africa there are more than 100 conflicts, how many actors, the lead actors in those conflicts, have the chairperson of the EU spoken to? In Ethiopia, the house was burning and people were talking about Ukraine, are talking about Russia, when tens of thousands of people are dying. And I will give you an information here. In Tigray alone, in March this year, between 50,000 and 100,000 people have been killed. 150,000 to 200,000 have died from starvation, and more than 100,000 have died through lack of healthcare services. In Ukraine alone, even if you look at the conflict, go and look at the conflict in Ukraine, how many people have died. So little compared to this, and yet the AU has been using their resources to try. So we understand that truly, that AU have to react to the plight of Africans anywhere in the world, and they are lacking in that. And one of the reasons is that the organization itself is just being managed by the political elite without involving the civil society organization, the think tanks, and even the people itself. They are so cut off from the AU.
Dr. Akinola, unfortunately, I have to interject. And Jan, you can only comment, please, if you can do it in 30 seconds.
Lerato, I think your guest there just asked questions that I wanted to ask. What is the role and the function of AU? Before going there, what is the role of SADC itself before we tint ourselves into African Union? Because if you've got leaders across our neighboring countries who are not applying governance as better as much as we know that we've got lack of governance in South Africa. But I think Zimbabwe can do better. Zambia can do better in terms of all these neighboring countries' brothers and sisters end up in South Africa. We have to start asking those questions on the leadership point, not anymore on attacking foreign nationals being in this country, so that they have a better platform to go back home. Okay, there is no way Zimbabwe can be in this position for so many years, but our leaders in South Africa, as hypocritic as they are, they don't ask these questions. What are they benefiting out of this unrest in those countries?
Thanks a lot for that, Jan. I think food for thought, and a conversation we can take forward with Dr. Adeoye Akinola at a future opportunity. He's the head of research and teaching for the Pan-African Thought and Conversation Institute at the University of Johannesburg.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za. or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.